All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is August the 22nd, 2022, at what time is it? At 9:22. No, 9:58. Hope everyone's having a great day, had a great weekend. I know I did. It was, got to get to a meeting. You know, I'm really excited. I'm excited because you know what, man? I enjoy meetings. And I've said in the past that if going to a meeting is better than what you were doing at home, then you're not going to a meeting, you're going to a social event. I still believe that. So when I say I really enjoy going to meetings, I don't absolutely enjoy the meeting, right? I mean, I do. I absolutely enjoy it, but I'm not like, it's not better than what I was doing at home. I would rather have stayed home. But I do enjoy meetings, and I enjoy the camaraderie and the people, and I enjoy how I feel afterwards. And, you know, I've talked endlessly about the fact of the pandemic and what it's done to meetings, but it's really a thing. And, you know, just trying to figure out my meeting game again. And so I've shared this endlessly. We live right down the street from a meeting hall. And so we went to, on Saturday. And funny thing is, I didn't even go to the meeting hall. I went to a different meeting that was down the street. So really excited about it. You know, if I could get to a couple, three meetings a week, I would really dig that, at least for now. We'll see. It may become monotonous. I don't know, but, monotony is good when it comes to meetings because, you know, it's always, you know, and I think if people, you know, are getting sober or are sober or have been sober, you know, whether you're new or not, in the end, it's just the humility, right? And taking time out of doing stuff that I like to find the humility to go down to another meeting and grind through an hour and leave. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that what comes from it. And I don't know if we ever understand that. You know, I don't know. It took years for me to at least understand that. And now that I understand it, I'm really, you know, just super grateful. You know, I was going to talk a little bit, you know, oh man, I'm so lucky that I am sober. I'm so lucky that I want to be sober. And I'm so lucky that at 7 years into getting sober, I realized that I didn't want to be sober, right? You know, I went to the meeting on Saturday and I shared, you know, it was, and the meeting was like, I can't even really remember the topic, but I remember what I shared was, is that, you know, 7 years into being sober, I realized that I never really wanted to be sober in the first place. And I think that's a big deal. And several people came up to me after the meeting and was like, yeah, you know, there's days I don't want to be sober now, right? But, you know, spending a lot of time early on in recovery trying to get sober, it is such an interesting environment, right? Because, you know, I believe that I wanted to be sober. Of course I wanted to be sober. Look at my life. I mean, everybody, you know, if I was surrounded by 15 people all staring at me, I'd say, of course I want to be sober, right? Because on the surface, on the outside, it would obviously look like I wanted to be sober, but there's part of me that didn't and still doesn't, you know, I like the game of having a lot of fun and getting high and, you know, or at least I used to. It's been so long that I did that I'm not sure. I always say if I put, you know, 53-year-old Tom into 21-year-old Tom, 53-year-old Tom would have a heart attack. So do I want to live that life? I do not. But, you know, it's like an old relationship, you know. I mean, even it takes many tries. Like I've been in relationships where it's ending or we've broken up. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we've been in it. I sort of wanted to talk about this anyway, but it's like that Seinfeld episode where Elaine's with, you know, David Putty and they break up and then they get back together and they break up and they get back together. That's sort of like how it was getting sober for me. you know, the first time we broke up, you know, maybe lasted an hour, right? The second and third, maybe it lasts a half a day. Maybe you get a day in the breakup. But, you know, eventually you end up coming back because I never wanted to really break up. Maybe there was other things that I would have rather done. I think I prefer, you know, maybe there were situations where maybe, and if you're young in your early relationships, you know, you date somebody, but there's all sorts of other people you'd like to date. Well, you know, maybe we broke up because I wanted to date somebody else, but, you know, the true self-centered asshole that I was, I'd probably wanted to date someone else and have my girlfriend. So, you know, it's always fluctuating. You break up for whatever reason, and then, you know, some sense comes back to you and you get back together. But that's sort of how it was for me breaking up with alcohol and drugs. You know, I think I broke up the first time. I think my parents broke us up a couple times. The law broke us up a couple times. But trying to find the motivation behind the breakup is really the challenge. And, you know, it's usually I'd like to have one foot in the bad behavior and another foot in the good behavior. And I'd like to get, you know, what comes from the good life on me so that I can live a better life, but still behave badly. And I think I did that for a very long time. But it wasn't until finally I just fucking surrendered, right? I just gave up. I said, listen, I can't have both worlds. And the bad world is just not working, right? I'm losing everything. Or I never got anything, you know, and that was more my case. I got into drinking and drugging early on in my life at a point where I didn't have really many opportunities to build anything for myself. So in the end, I wasn't losing much, but it was all of the things that I was wanting and the plans that I had had, the hopes, the dreams, right? And none of it was coming true because I couldn't get sober. So, you know, one of the things that I've, you know, I think just being honest, and I said this in the meeting the other night, it's like, it's just at some point, I think, you know, especially, and I shared it in a different podcast, how I was sort of giving the program or AA or whatever program it is that we use sort of a black eye because I said, my mouth said one thing, but my behavior said another. And if you're standing by and watching, you know, somebody like that, you would think, maybe that program doesn't work because he's telling me, he looked me straight in the eye and said, I want to be sober, but it doesn't seem like his involvement in that program seems to be working. So it clearly must be the program. It's not the case. It was me. And I said it in the meeting. I said, you know, one of the first thing, and it took 7 years, right? 7 years for me to finally admit I didn't want to be sober. It doesn't mean I shouldn't be, or that doesn't mean I couldn't be, or that doesn't mean that I won't be. It just, if I'm going to be honest, I don't want to be sober. I love that life that I had, except for all the bad stuff, you know, like going to jail, crashing cars, you know, losing relationships. I hated all that part. But the, you know, whatever it is we did, you know, hunting it down, finally doing it, I love that. The hanging out with friends. It was a lot of good stuff. And I had to be real honest. And me being honest was I didn't want to get sober. So finally clearing that out of the way and saying that, you know, that does, and just because I don't want to, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to. It just means that I'm putting it all out there. And, you know, because I had to figure out what was behind me getting sober. And I've talked about it. And I think that anybody that might be listening could absolutely relate. You know, we've told 100 people 100 different reasons why we want to get sober. But for the 100th time, it hasn't worked. And I think the first step for me to finding sobriety was to admit I didn't want it. I didn't want it. So, and listen, if that's how you are, it's fine, you know. But it is the first step. It is, for me, was the first step admitting that my life had become unmanageable. And what had become unmanageable is really reality. I had lost a touch with reality. And, you know, reading that first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, has a lot of big words in it that fit me. Admitted, powerless, alcohol, unmanageable. You're right? These are all words that are, you know, key words for me that ring true. So it's easy for that, reading that first step, to absolutely find that that was for me. But, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I don't know. I'm not even sure what that even means. We admitted, I know, probably first humble thing I'd done to admit, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Like, once I drink it, before I drink it, you know, it was just a whole lot of stuff. So, but to get humble and to admit, we admitted that we didn't want to get sober, or I admitted that finally that I really didn't want to get sober. I need to, and I'm going to, but I don't like it, right? It's like eating Brussels sprouts. I'll eat it. I know it's good for me, but I don't fucking like it. And that's sort of how early recovery was for me. And when I talk to people, you know, all the time people will, you know, whether they listen to this podcast or they know about recovery or they know that I'm in recovery, people will come up to me and they'll say, you know, so-and-so is really having a lot of trouble. So-and-so needs to take a look at this behavior. So-and-so needs help. So-and-so could maybe use some help from you. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Because I've seen how the sausage is made, right? I've seen how the miracle, what all needs to go into this grind before maybe you might get a little taste of the miracle. And it's not easy, right? And it's not fun. And it's unfortunately a lot of disappointment. And but if somebody really wants it, it is absolutely doable and it isn't hard, right? It's not hard to get sober if that's what you really want. But finding the honesty, and, you know, I heard about this person who's struggling and, you know, I know exactly what they're going through. You know, it's weird when you hear the words about people that are out there struggling and the family is completely oblivious, right? Has no clue. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, this person's completely a fucking drunk or drug addict. And they are pulling the fucking wool over these people's eyes. I know for me, I don't want to tell anybody, right? I don't want to be the person that tells them, oh my God, you're fucking fighting an uphill battle that you're never going to win. You might as well just leave this person, right? Because they're deep into it. But of course, you don't want to just leave them. You want to help them and work with them. And it's tough. And I feel bad. And, you know, there are parts of me that want to, I think especially early on in sobriety, you want to help everybody. But as time has gone on, you realize, man, the only thing that's going to help them is them. Day I die, absolutely. You know, it's a it's tough. And you know, the tough part about helping or watching other people get sober is the journey, right? And it isn't always a smooth path. And when you've seen how the sausage is made, unfortunately, you don't find yourself with a lot of patience for a lot of the BS that comes along out of people that are trying to get sober's mouth. And what even comes out of my mouth, you know, it's a tough, you know, it's only, it's like only loved ones really can put up with that shit. And it's unfortunate. And you try to figure out ways to help people avoid some of the struggles that maybe I went through trying to get sober or try to still continuing to stay sober. You know, I've said before, if someone came up to me and said, hey, man, if you do this and you do this and you don't do this and you don't do this, but you do this, you will be sober. I'd been like, oh, I would actually told him, sounds good. I'm in. But that's bullshit because that's what I do. As soon as it gets tough, you know, a lot of the times I'm out the door. So who knows what was going to happen? So for me, you know, unfortunately, I got to kind of grind through these ups and downs of sobriety. And unfortunately, other people trying to get sober have to do the same thing. I think one of the biggest challenges for getting sober is thinking that you have a drinking problem. Because when you, and you do, we do. We do have a drinking problem. I also have a lot of other problems. But definitely drinking was a problem. That first day I removed the drinking from my life, it is very easy for a guy like me to believe that quietly, with nobody looking or listening, that I fixed the problem, right? And, you know, if we didn't have a brain and a conscience and a heart and thought, maybe we would. Maybe that would fix the problem. But we have a brain and we have a heart and we have thought and we have a conscience and we think and we you know, I remember, you know, I being very proud of myself, right? Good job, Tom. You know, you've gone 2 days without a drink. And for a guy who drank every single day, that was a fucking miracle. And you know what? Privately, I did pat myself on the shoulder. And privately, I think that's okay. Right? But you start learning. And one of the cool things, I don't know if anybody's ever checked out this book, but there's a great book and it's called Drop the Rock. And, you know, this isn't an AA-approved podcast, and this is an AA-approved reading material. But it's got a great message. And it's called Drop the Rock, Removing Character Defects, Steps 6 and 7. Character defects. Ha. Very interesting. I'm just going to read the intro to this. I love this. This book was a big... And what's the step 7? Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Humbly asked... him to remove our shortcomings. Humbly asked. Humbly, right? Humility. High road. I'm just going to read this introduction. It's actually pretty good, and I like this little story. It says, seems there was with this group of 12-step members taking a boat ride to the island called Serenity. And it was truly a happy bunch of people. As the boat pulled away from the dock, a few on board noticed Mary running down the street trying to catch up with the boat. One member said, darn, she's missed the boat. Another said, maybe not. Come on, Mary. Jump in the water. Swim, swim. You can make it. You can catch up with us. So Mary jumped into the water and started to swim for all she was worth. She swam for quite a while and then started to sink. The members on board, now all aware that Mary was struggling, shouted, come on, Mary. Don't give up. Drop the rock. With that encouragement, Mary started swimming again, only to start sinking again shortly afterward. She was going under, and when she heard all of those voices shouting to her, Mary, drop the rock. Mary, drop the rock. Let the rock go. Drop the rock. Mary was vaguely aware of something around her neck. Now she couldn't quite figure out what it was. Once more, she gathered her strength and started swimming. She was doing quite well, even gaining a little on the boat, but then she felt the heaviness pulling her under again. She saw all those people on the boat holding on their hands and hollering for her to keep swimming and shouting, don't be an idiot, Mary, drop the rock. Then she understood when she was going down for the third time. This thing around her neck, this was why she kept sinking. Sorry here. When she really wanted to catch the boat. The thing was the rock they were all shouting about. Resentments, fear, dishonesty, self-pity, intolerance, and anger were just some of the things her rock was made of. Let me read that again. The thing was the rock they were all shouting about resentment, fear, dishonesty, self-pity, intolerance, and anger were just some of these things her rock was made of. God, help me get rid of the rock, she prayed. Now get rid of it. Mary managed to stay afloat long enough to untangle a few of the strings holding the rock around her neck, realizing as she did that her load was easing up. Then, with another burst of energy, she let go. She tore the other strings off and dropped the rock. Once free of the rock, she was amazed how easy it was to swim, and she soon caught up to the boat. Those on board were cheering for her, applauding and telling her how great she was and how it was so good having her with them again. And how now they could get on with the boat ride and have a nice time. Mary felt great and was just about to indulge in a little rest and relaxation when she glanced back to shore. There, a ways back, she thought she saw something bobbing in the water, so she pointed it out to some of the others. Sure enough, someone was trying to catch the boat, swimming for dear life, but not making much headway. In fact, it looked like the person was going under. Mary looked around and saw concern on the faces of other members. She was the first to lean over the rail and shout, "Hey, friend, drop the rock." Yeah, I love this book. This was a real help for me because, you know, that what a great story, right? I mean, that is my life. You know, wanting a better life, and that's sort of what I was sharing earlier in the podcast. I want everything that comes with recovery, but I don't want to let go of anything. You know, I shared the other day about the God thing. You know, people that don't want to use God they'll do everything except the God part, they're going to sink into the bottom of the freaking pond. If you want to fight and kick and scream on every turn on this program or some program or whatever it is that you're, whatever journey you're on to get sober, and you want to fight and kick and scream on every turn, fucking don't bother. Right? And I say that, but at the same time, I say do bother. Try. You know, I guess ideally we hope that a little of it gets on you. And, you know, maybe they dredge you and pull your ass off the bottom of the pond and let you try swimming one more time. And each time you try, you know, maybe you drop another little rock. It's just dropping enough rocks that you can get out to the boat. And that is recovery. It's dropping the rock. That is recovery. That is the humility, the ability to say, listen, I see what's going on and I'm done with it, right? And you drop it. And that's one of the tough things about early recovery, especially trying to help somebody. I don't know how to help people in early recovery. You know, I guess it's just to sit and listen and, you know, share a little bit what I did in the beginning and what I did to get sober was I went to 120 meetings in 90 days. You know, I think that if you go to a meeting for 90 days in a row, you will start to drop some rocks. Whether it's just, you know, because I think we all have different size rocks. I mean, there's some big ass rocks, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, you know, all that shit that was mentioned in that story. Those are big rocks, right? Those ones are obvious. You kick them bitches right off the boat or hook them from your neck or whatever it is that we're doing here. Those ones are the obvious ones, right? But it's those little baby versions of it, you know? Of course I want to get sober, huh? But I'm still carrying around this rock which says, you know, privately, I don't. You know, I've shared before, I think it's important that we say that. You know, if you don't want to get sober, you should say it. We all get it. We all understand. But can you determine that even regardless of you rather, or regardless if you want to, should you? And that's usually where the dropping of the rock takes place because, you know, when it's obvious, drinking and drugging and partying are not working for you, it's clear as day that you should probably stop. It's just, do we want to? And, but, you know, a lot of things have to happen prior to this dropping of the rock, you know. I think the big rock is just daily drinking. That was my first rock I had to drop. Dropped that rock, and I went to a meeting. You know, my situation was a little different because I got my ass kicked. And unfortunately, you know, that's, you know, maybe some people are like, hey, wow, I drink too much. I'm just going to get sober. I personally don't believe that that happens because I've tried to get sober several times in my life off different things, weed, alcohol, and meth. And there wasn't one time that I said, oh, geez, I think I'm going to get sober because I've just had enough. It doesn't happen. It takes, because this is a self-centered disease. This is ego. This is me running my own show. And that's tough, you know. It's that persistent kid at the front of the line. You're like, hey, man, it's my turn to go. And they just won't get off the fucking front of the line. That's how fucking getting sober is. That addiction just won't get out of the way. Unfortunately, it takes an event. Ego devastation, complete humiliation. You know, whether it's getting arrested. You know, I remember when I got my first DUI. I was fucking humiliated. I remember when I got busted, humiliated, when I got my ass kicked, humiliated. Actually, you know what? The thing that really was the most ego devastating was getting punched in the face at a bar by someone that I don't remember who it was because I was a big mouth. That one, and I think that, at least for me, you know, I've gone through little experiences through my addiction days. You know, the first time I got hit or first time I got stitches, or the first time I crashed, eh. The second time, eh. But the fifth time or the sixth time, you're like, oh, my God, you know, this is. And that was the conversation. I'd like to say that I said to myself, hey, man, your life's unmanageable. You should get sober. It really wasn't. But what was unmanageable was me having to explain why I got my ass kicked to a bunch of my friends at work. That seemed unmanageable. And that's why I chose that night to go to the hospital and hide. And but it takes, unfortunately, it takes a moment. And when people come up to me and say, you know, so-and-so's struggling, so-and-so is this and so-and-so is that, the only thing so-and-so isn't is aware of their problem, right? Everybody, like I said the other day, and I've said in the past, you know, my life became unmanageable to everybody else. And that's what happens to most addicts and drunks. Their life sucks to us. To them, they're all right. You know, it's an inconvenience. Sorry I yelled. Sorry I stormed around, broke some shit. Sorry about all that. I'm okay. It's the family that can't take it. And, you know, usually when this conversation comes up, the family has had it. The only problem is the person that they're talking about usually hasn't. And so that's unfortunately what it takes. And, you know, you don't want to tell people that, right? Yeah. You know, he or she, you know, might get sober, you know, once her life gets fucking flipped upside down, you know. Usually don't get sober when you have your own business, your successful business, and successful marriage, successful parent, successful in the community. Those aren't usually the top five things that are going on in your life when you are a struggling drug addict and alcoholic, right? There's something going on. And when one of those pops, right? I remember I had a landscaping business with a buddy of mine, and I hated the business. I didn't even want to do it, but I didn't want to do what I was doing before that, which was working on a golf course, and moved out to this area and came in still struggling with alcohol. And I remember he came up to me and said, listen, I can't do this business with you anymore. And I'm like, why? And he goes, well, a customer called me last night and said you came by to fix some lights and they smelled alcohol in your breath. Oh, ego devastation, complete humiliation. That hurts, right? Those are the moments. Then you're like, oh, well, I don't know what I'm going to do now, but first thing I probably should do is get sober. And if you can jump on the moment, if you can take advantage of it, that's awesome. The problem is that, you know, the next day, you know, maybe they're not so disappointed in you. The family hasn't completely lost it, and it doesn't seem like everything's going to fall to pieces. And then you're like, well, all right, well, maybe I can drink again. And it's tough. I hope that that doesn't have to happen to people. It's a shame when you have to lose everything. Unfortunately, the person that I was talking to or my wife was talking to, unfortunately, you know, they'll probably have to lose everything before this person will figure it out. I mean, I would love to help, But one thing I know about getting sober is it just doesn't happen because your life's slightly inconvenient. You know, when I finally got sober, I'd lost my wife. I'd lost my child. I had lost my, was getting ready to lose my career. I'd lost everything. And that's when I was able to take a hard look and try to figure out what I needed to do, which was what I already knew, which was get sober. Let's see if I can read a little daily reflections and then I'll get out of here. Let's see. Daily reflections. Seeking emotional stability. August the 22nd. When we developed still more, we discovered the best possible source of emotional stability to be God himself.
Or good.
We found that dependence upon his perfect justice, forgiveness, and love was healthy and that it would work where nothing else would. If we really depended upon God, we couldn't very well play God to our fellows, nor would we feel the urge wholly to rely on human protection and care. Read that again. If we really depended upon God, we couldn't very well play God to our fellows. That's right. What that says to me is, if I have the humility to depend upon God, then I should have the same humility to know that I cannot fix everybody out there. Or I'm not capable? I don't know. We couldn't very well play God to our fellows, nor would we feel the urge wholly to rely on human protection and care. Anyway, 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 116. All my life I depended on people for my emotional needs and security. But today I cannot live that way anymore. By the grace of God, I have admitted my powerlessness over people, places, and things. I had been a real people addict. Wherever I went, there had to be someone who would pay some kind of attention to me. It was the kind of attitude that could only get worse, because the more I depended on others and demanded attention, the less I received. I have given up believing that any human power can relieve me of my empty feelings, although I remain a fragile human being who needs to work AA steps to keep this particular principle before my personality. It is only a loving God who can give me inner peace and emotional stability. Yeah. These sound like rocks that need to be dropped, man. You know, people, places, and things are rocks. You know, you have to drop that same shit. But, you know, it's just getting to the point where you even notice that you even got rocks to drop, right? And I think that's, you know, one day at a time. Hey, I appreciate everybody letting me share. Hope everyone has a great day, and I'll catch you later. Bye. Rebel souls, deserters we are called. Chose a girl. Six guns out.